Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. Welcome to our show today. I'm so excited to introduce my guest, Karen Ackerman from Ohio, and she's going to share her gardening journey with us. So welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you, Jackie. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks. I'm so glad you could join us. Go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about yourself, where in Ohio you're from, and how you started your gardening journey there, and
okay,
just anything you'd want us to know, I guess.
Okay. I actually have gardened for a long time, but I got into my flower business 3 years ago, and the first year I really didn't do a whole lot with it. The second year was more of a learning curve for me, and this year I am hopefully going all out. I'll be doing this full time. I'm from Pioneer, Ohio, which is in the tri-state of Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana. And I am so excited to do this business. This has kind of been a dream of mine. I love flowers. I love working with flowers. So to actually have the opportunity to fulfill my dream is very exciting to me.
And what's the business's name?
Flowers Galore.
Flowers Galore. Nice. And so I always kind of like to start the show by telling everybody about your very first gardening experience. Like, how old were you? Were you a little kid or were you an adult? Like, who were you with? What'd you grow? Can you just tell us a little bit about that really quick?
Sure. I actually watched my grandmother. She was very much into her roses. She always had roses. And back then, they never had pesticides or anything. So I just grew up watching her pick a lot of bugs and paid very close attention to detail. She was very detail-oriented when it came to her roses. So I learned from her, and then both my parents were very avid gardeners and raised a lot of our own crops when I was growing up. So I started out very young.
Do you have brothers and sisters, too, that shared that gardening?
Two older brothers.
Two older brothers? Nice.
Yes, two older brothers. My oldest brother, he does do a little bit of gardening, not too much. Not like me.
Okay. And then tell us a little bit about what organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening means to you.
Well, it means to me that you create a habitat that's friendly for bees, butterflies, birds, and beneficial insects.
Wonderful. Now, was your grandmother the one that inspired you to start using organic techniques?
Yes.
Is that how you got into it? And is that how you learned how to garden organically, or did you study it anywhere? Or?
Well, I didn't really understand it, I guess, because I was really young. And, my parents, they didn't use many chemicals that I ever knew of when they were gardening. But I actually, when I kind of got into my own business, I've never used chemicals at all on any of my flowers. And I have a lot of flower beds around the house. I just never really thought, I guess, of using chemicals. It's the farmers do around us. We have 120 acres surrounding our house. And I absolutely despise when they come through and spray. They have killed flowers of mine. And just the smell is so horrible that I've always been very reluctant, I guess, to use chemicals and pesticides. So I avoid them.
Yep, I always wonder about that too.
Mm-hmm.
So that smell and just in the air. And my mother, I interviewed her back, I think, like on episode 10, because she lives in the suburbs on Long Island. And when her neighbors spray, she heats that and it gets in her yard too.
Yep.
So I know that's a big pain point that we all share.
Right.
So let's talk about this year or last season. Tell us about something that grew well last year in your garden. Was there a flower that did exceptionally well that you were really happy with? Or?
Actually, yes, there was. For the first time ever, I grew dahlias. And everybody was saying, they're very picky and this and that. And I was like, oh, great, because I'm the kind that scatters the seeds and watches things grow. But, my dahlias were absolutely gorgeous last year. And I was so thrilled with them that I was like, I raised dahlias. I don't even know what I'm doing, but here I am. I've got all these beautiful dahlias. So, yeah, I was really excited about that.
So did you just, spread the seeds out, or was there anything special that you did? Like, how are you growing those?
I actually bought tubers And then I just planted the tubers and grew them that way. Seeds are very picky.
Now, you said, I know we talked a little bit about your hoop house in the kind of pre-interview, but tell us a little bit more about your place there. Like, how did you, I didn't even really understand what you just said. Like, there's 120 acres that you have or like around your place?
Right. No, there's a 120 acre farm that surrounds my home, which is the farmers come in and they plant all that. That's not our property. We have 2 acres, but where my where my store is at, it was where I should say my business is at. That's actually located in Camden, Michigan, which is 2 miles from me. So I own property in Michigan, right on the state line, and I have 1 acre there, and that's where I raise my flowers.
Okay, and then, like, what kind of beds do you have there that you're putting them in? Are they long rows, or are they raised beds or anything?
Nope, they're all long rows, and what I did is I just removed the sod. They're all 2 foot wide, and I have 5 of them that's 200 foot long, and I have 7 of them that's 175 feet long.
Oh, my goodness. That's a lot of space. So then did you grow a whole bed of dahlias, or did you put, like, some other plants in a bed? Or
I mixed the beds. I don't really even have a system for it. I just kind of get my seeds out, and I start planting, and then, you know, I plant the next one. And if I want to split the rows, I do. And a lot of my rows are split into anywhere from 3 different kinds of flowers to 5 different kinds of flowers. Just depending on how many seeds I have. So.
Okay. So, is there something that you're going to do different or you're excited to try this year that you didn't do last year?
My very first year of flower farming, I actually got a whole pile of old manure. And it has to be at least 7 years old or it'll burn up your seeds. So I got the old manure and I spread it through every one of my rows. And what I did is I just scattered the seeds and my flowers were gorgeous. I didn't have hardly any weeds at all. Well, last year I couldn't get any more manure. So I just had to direct seed onto the soil and I had tons of weeds. And I really spent a lot of time last year pulling weeds. So this year I'm investing in plastic. And the plastic will go down, and I will be planting inside the plastic. I'll just burn holes in my plastic and then put the seeds inside the holes so that way I'm not pulling weeds like I did last year.
How do you burn a hole in the plastic?
You can take a little propane torch, and then you just, however many holes you decide for whatever seed, how far apart your plants have to be, then you can just take and you just real lightly take the tip a little bit away from the plastic and just get it close and it'll burn the hole right in it. So you can make up your own pattern. You can do whatever you want with it. It's just a little trick, but it's a lot cheaper doing it yourself than buying the pre-made plastic that has the holes in it. So.
Okay. So tell me about something that didn't work so well last season.
I'd say the biggest problem I had last year was not getting my hands on manure. Really, it was, because my flowers, even though they were beautiful, they just weren't gorgeous. Like when I had the manure down, it made a difference in their height, the size of the flower head, the insects, it really actually helped with that. So I would say that was definitely my biggest downfall, was not being able to have manure last year.
So did you get a new source for manure this year that you know you're going to get?
Actually, I contacted.
I think that's kind of a hard thing for all of
us. It is very hard to find. And, you know, now they sell it. It can be very costly, especially when you have, you know, as much area as I do. So I have been contacting local farmers. I just go to their home and been asking, hey, this is what I do for a living. I give them my business card and I say, you know, would you happen to have any old manure that I could take off your hands? And I actually had a friend of mine contact me yesterday and said, "Hey, my brother has that horse farm. You know,
Oh,
call
no.
him and ask him." I don't know how old the manure is, so I got to call Tom tomorrow morning, actually, and we'll see. But keeping my fingers crossed, I can get a hold of some somewhere.
And then I think it was back like in episode 4 or 5, or like one in the very beginning, I interviewed a woman from around here, Peggy Owsley, and she was talking about something that you have to really watch out for nowadays is making sure that the animals you get the manure from have not been fed weed-free hay. Because the weed-free hay, if they're eating that, has a lot of pesticides in it, and then their manure can kind of burn out your vegetables and flowers as well that way too, because if it just has those pesticide residues still in it.
Sure.
So that's been a bit of a problem around here, is finding better manure than what a lot of some of the cows and horses have been eating. So
Right. And I think
that's
that
just something.
where I live too, and I know that, farmers have used pesticides for a long time. The first batch I got was from horses, and it was, gosh, it had to be probably 20 years old. I mean,
Oh.
so I don't know. My
Yeah.
flowers did beautiful, so that is a good point, though.
So, and I think the more it sits, probably the
I
better
think
it will
so.
get
Yeah,
too. So,
definitely.
and I know we had a dump truck about 10 or so years ago, and there was a farm that had been for around here for generations, and they had just sold the farm, so they were getting all rid of all their manure, and we hauled dump truckload after dump truckload, not just to our place, but people were paying us like crazy for that
Wow.
manure, and it was just so nice. And all of us are still like, oh, I wish we could get some more of that.
Yeah.
So I know
Yeah.
it's tough to find sometimes,
It is.
so
Oh, I do, and I think there's a lot of farmers that have stopped farming. So it's not like a even where I live, there's a lot of farmers, but there again, I think they've gone so much to pesticides and stuff because a lot of them don't have animals anymore. They just farm the land. So,
Okay, how about something that you find is easy to grow and is generally successful every time in your area?
let me see here. I actually last year, well, something super easy to grow is bachelor buttons. I mean,
Oh, I love
yeah, they're
those.
very simple. You just scatter your seeds and they come back every year because they drop all their seeds at the end of the season. So that's something that is very easy for a beginner to grow. But I found
Nice.
something last year for the first time I raised anemones.
Oh, uh-huh.
And there again, some people were like, "Oh, they're a little picky and they like this and like that." Well, I didn't know any of that. So I just scattered my seeds and they were blooming way past the first frost and the florist absolutely loved them. She's like,
Hey,
"Those are
nice.
so beautiful." And I'm like, yes, they are. So I was ecstatic about my flowers. That was just perfect.
So, since you mentioned the florist, I was curious about that. So, where are you finding outlets to sell your flowers? Like, if you've been successful there, do you have any tips for people about selling flowers that you've learned already?
Sure.
Are you selling them at farmers markets at all, or local florist, or?
I went to a local florist. And she, what I did is I just cut my buckets of flowers and I'd take like two buckets at a time. And I would go every week at the same day, every week I would show up. And so she knew, she became familiar with me. And I would just say, I told her about my business. I gave her my business card the first time around. It was pretty nerve-wracking. But when she saw my flowers, she was like, "Oh my gosh, Karen, those are beautiful." And she bought both buckets of flowers. And I was like, wow, that was super easy. So I just continued what I was doing. And she started encouraging me. She's like, "Your flowers are so beautiful. And I would love for you just to keep bringing them to me.
Oh,
Whatever you
nice.
get, bring." And so that went on probably half the summer anyway. And then she started saying, "Well, Karen, you need to go m to my friend this florist here, and you need to go, there's a florist in Morenci, and Hudson, and I mean, she started naming off all these florists that I need to go to. She's like, you've got to take your flowers to these florists. So I was very fortunate in having a florist love my flowers enough to keep encouraging me. And I think that made a big difference. But I do think that even if you come across one that says, oh, I don't want your flowers, you know, they don't know if you're going to be dependable or not. Right now, they have wholesalers that's dependable. So if you want to get your foot in the door, you have to show up at the same time, the same day, every single week till they become accustomed to you showing up and, you know, knowing that they can count on you. So,
right. So how did you learn how to do this, or what inspired you to start a flower business? Can I just ask? Or?
Sure. Actually, I lost both my parents, and I inherited.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And I inherited the property from my mom and dad, and it was actually a property that belonged to my brother and I, that was left to us. And then I lost my brother three months after my mom. So I really was like, what am I going to do with this place? It was a rental. And I just started praying, really praying, like, God, what do you want me to do here, you know? And I just, like, honestly thought, just started thinking about, well, what would you do in your future if you could do one thing that you would truly love to do, what would it be? And flowers just kept raising flowers, you know? So it kind of was like a God-given thing to me that he, as sad as it is, closed doors, he also opened doors for me. So that's kind of how and then I just started doing a bunch of research because I'm like, you know, flowers. How do you do that? I had no idea. And I started putting in selling flowers, and it started popping up flower farmers. And I'm like, instantly, like, that's what I want to do. That is what I'm meant to do. So, nice. Yeah.
Okay. Well, how about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
Oh, gosh. You know, I can't really give you that answer. I'm sorry, because everything I've planted so far, and I've planted a huge variety of flowers, I really can't say that I have anything that hasn't come up or hasn't done quite well. I do think one of the toughest things is zinnias, and that's only because they do very well, but they're really prone to powdery mildew. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that you got to be really aware of, because it can wipe out your whole crop quickly.
Okay.
So,
Is there anything you can do about powdery mildew at all that you know of, or that's worked, or there, just pretty much you just get it out of there?
No, there is something that you can do about it. And last year I ended up losing a whole, like, almost like overnight, it seemed like I lost them. And I just did a little bit of research on it. And I think that there are different techniques. And by then the crop was done, so I didn't even bother to use anything. I just cut them all down. And so I can't really give you – that would be something, though, that I definitely need to look up again, because I am raising zinnias again this year. So.
Okay. So which activity is your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Like, is there anything you have to force yourself to go out there and do every day?
Or pull weeds. pull weeds. Okay. That's the worst. Yeah.
And what about your favorite activity to do in the garden?
I think just walking out amongst the flowers and seeing them start to bloom, and you have the excitement of, before long, these things are going to be absolutely beautiful, and I get to cut them, and just a hands-on experience with doing what you love to do. There's nothing like it.
Nice. I know. I love flowers too. That's what I want to be, is the flower farmer.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then Mike does the vegetables.
And
my goal this year is to plant like 750 sunflowers and harvest 2,000 sunflowers.
There you go.
My first year when I read that Lynn Bazinti, I never know how to say her last name's book, The Flower Farmer, I planted 75 sunflowers and harvested like 200 flowers. So this year I'm going a lot bigger, and we expanded our garden and put in a new well, so I can do that this year where I haven't really been able to do it before.
That
so
is,
and I just like, I'm just gonna mostly focus on sunflowers, although we do grow a lot of zinnias and snapdragons, and you know, there's other flowers definitely down our garden. I love echinacea, is one of my favorites. Okay. But sunflowers are definitely my specialty, or so, I don't know, I just like
them. So let me ask you, when you do your sunflowers, do you cut them like when they're just starting to petal, like the petals are just barely opening? Okay. Okay. And do you have a cooler that you put yours in, or?
Oh, I'm not anywhere near there yet. I just pick them and put them in vases or give them to friends. Like, I haven't tried to sell anything yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm not anywhere near that point. So I don't even know if I'm going to try that this year. Like, I'm kind of like you, like starting out very slowly and just seeing. And also there's that whole consistency piece that I need to get into, which I have to say, I was just thinking about this podcast is really getting me disciplined into, you know, doing something specifically every week and on a schedule. And so that's going to be my goal this summer, just to see how consistently, how many flowers can I get, what that would look like, and trying to figure out like what day would I go if I'm going to go to a store, and where they would be. I don't know if I'll actually get out and do that this year. We'll see. So
good for you.
All part of the journey.
That's exactly right. It's one step at a time.
And the thing I like, I kind of am drawn to sunflowers, I guess, about too, is because they're both a flower, but they also, you know, there are seeds. If they, if you can get them to go to seed here in Montana, it's a little bit tricky, you know, because at the end of the year, you have to worry about the frost, but to get them to actually make heads that produce seeds. So that's going to be, but I always think that's a cool benefit. And then there's also the biodiesel somewhere way, way down the line. If I could grow some biodiesel, I think that would be cool.
Nice.
So, all right. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
It would probably have my little flower snips. Because I'm always cutting flowers somewhere, whether it's at my house or at the store.
How about deadheading? Do you have anything to say about deadheading? Because that was one thing at the very, my second episode was Lisa Ziegler, who wrote a book called Cool Flowers and talks a lot about harvesting annuals.
Okay.
And she's grows, what is it? Like they cut 10,000 blooms a week, like 250,000 blooms a season. That's, it's insane what she's done.
That's crazy. I saw the book. I actually went to see Lynn Beninsky up at Michigan University like 3 weeks ago, a month ago, and they had that book there, and I didn't buy it, and I should have. So I haven't got to read that book yet, but that's amazing.
But anyway, so she talked about the importance of deadheading. So do you have anything to say about deadheading yet that you've learned, and just making a schedule and committing to, you're going to deadhead the flowers, you know, 3 times a week, whether you want to or not, and whether you're going to market or anything.
Right. Actually, when I go in, I go every day, and I would look, I just walk the rows, and bachelor buttons is one that you need to deadhead. And I would just carry my little snips with me, and I'd snip. And it finally got to the point where bachelor buttons are so little, I just take my fingers and pop the heads off. And it was a lot quicker. And I just dropped them. I would drop the heads because I kept them in the same rows for the last few years. Well, this last year, I actually started taking the heads and putting them in buckets because I need to rotate that. I need to get those out of there and move them to another spot just because it's so much better for the soil. But my zinnias are really, you have to deadhead zinnias. It makes them just, the other flowers so much better and stronger and prettier that it's really important. And when you deadhead, make sure you take a bucket or something with you. I actually bought a little cart and I put the buckets in it. So when I'm walking along and I start deadheading, I have buckets to throw the deadheads in. It's just,
That's a great idea.
So much easier than going back and trying to pick them up off the ground. It's like double the work as far as I'm concerned. So that's just a little tip that I've learned because I did cut them and threw them on the ground and had a big mess to go clean up. So I was like, enough of that.
And to me, that's so important. Like, convenience is an essential part of gardening. Exactly. Like, anything you can do to make it more convenient, it's going to make your garden grow more. It's going to make you enjoy it more. And it's going to just be more beneficial, more efficient everywhere around.
And efficiency is money.
That's a good
thing. It's profit.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to think of it like that, too. The more efficient you can be, the more profit you will make.
How about, so speaking, since we're not really talking about vegetables today, something about harvesting flowers on time. Like, you asked me kind of a little bit about the sunflowers. Like, do you have any tips for harvesting the flowers at their prime?
Well, right now, like, I can give you, in my hoop house, which is something totally new to me. So my first year, I have tulips coming up. I have 230 tulips planted in there. And I just know that when they are very tightly closed and you can barely see a color shining through the petal, you want to cut them. And then you can actually take those, lay them in plastic tubs after you wrap them in newspaper, and just put them in a dark cooler, and they last for a couple weeks like that. Oh, so
that's a great one.
That's something that I learned new this year, so...
So did you have to get a bunch of coolers for your business then? Yeah. Like giant, like refrigerator coolers? Is that what you're talking
nope.
about?
Or? What I'm talking about, in that Lynn Beninsky's book, The Flower Farmer, she talks about what's called a cool bot. And it is it's this little device that you attach to a regular air conditioning unit, like a window unit. And you can set it up and you can build an inside cooler wherever is convenient for you. Some people build them inside their garage. Some people put them in a bedroom in their house. It just totally depends on where you want to put it. But you can put shelves up, and then that way when you're cutting your flowers, you can take and store them in the cooler. And they last so much longer, especially if you're going to cut and you can't get to the florist for 2 or 3 days. You need a cool, dark place for them to be. So it just helps. It adds days to your flower's life. Much more profitable for you or me than to cut them and set them in buckets and just have nowhere really cool to keep them. You've got to hurry up and turn them over to somebody that has a cooler. So you can build that cooler any size you want. It's, do you have the Flower Farmer book then, Jackie?
I do have that book for sure.
Okay, it's in there. So research that. That's a really...
I just have to go back and look at
that. That's a really cool item to get. I did buy one this year, so we're going to be building a cooler.
Okay. So since we're not really talking about vegetables today, maybe I will ask you about... secrets for, you know, creating like a special bouquet or anything. Like, do you do mixed bouquets? Do you have anything like secrets for putting those together, or maybe tips for, I don't know, which flowers, you know, planting in succession, like which flowers come up, like thinking about how you're going to plan, like you put tulips that you know are getting ready now, or
right.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, like I said too, like this is really new for me because the few years that I did it, I just kind of scattered the seeds and I didn't really pay attention, I guess, to succession planning. But that was a big thing in Lynn's book she talked about. And so this year I actually took her book and I went each month. She breaks it down for the hoop house, which is what I have, our high tunnel. And I started planting my tulips, and then I've planted stock and lupine and bells of Ireland in there. And some of those will actually be planted also outside in the fields. So as far as succession planning, I just think that you need to know your seeds. You need to kind of research, okay, this one blooms in June, this one blooms in July, because that's something new for me this year. And as far as creating bouquets, I did not create any bouquets. All I did was cut them, put them in buckets. So there was like a variety of flowers in the bucket, and that's how I sold them to the florist. Now this year I'm going to do it a little bit different, because this year I'll be doing, say I'm going to sell zinnias and anemones, and all the zinnias are going to cut so many per bucket. So they can see, okay, there's, you know, 20 stems of zinnias in that bucket, or, you know, there's 20 stems of anemones in this bucket, just because it'll be easier for me to keep track of how many stems I cut. It'll be easier for me to keep track of my profit and my cost that way. And I am getting into selling wedding flowers this year. This is my first year to do this, and I already have a wedding planned for the fall. So I'll be taking classes on how to create wedding bouquets. And it's something new and exciting. I really would like to get into that end of the work, is creating the wedding bouquets. But we do sell buckets if a bride wants to come to the farm and pick out flowers for her wedding. Then she can tell me, okay, I can tell her, okay, this is what I'm going to have available at that time in July. And then she can pick the one she wants. And I actually cut buckets, 5-gallon buckets of those flowers, and it's $75 a bucket. Now, if she starts getting into the more expensive flowers, which, you know, like dahlias and that kind of thing, then the price goes up from there. But a borderline 5-gallon bucket is $75.
How about a favorite internet resource? Is there any particular website or websites that you really like to go to, or anything that you found?
I think one of the biggest and best resources I had was American Cut Flower Association. Mm-hmm. That was definitely, when I had got online and I started typing in flower farmers, Gretel Smith, from Sunny Meadows Farm popped up, and I contacted Gretel. Well, she was a part of the American Cut Flower Association, and she actually invited me to go to her farm in Columbus. So I drove down there, and I think that was a big deal to me to actually be able to see hands-on, and I got to help pull weeds in her greenhouses and just kind of see the system that they had going. And she explained a lot of things to me. So I would say Cut Flower Association. But there's also another reading material I found that I thought was really, really good, and that was Growing Flowers for Profit by Linda Tobey.
Okay.
And that was an ebook. I think it was very reasonable, and that had a lot of good information in it too about selling your flowers for profit. So
okay, I'll have to check it out. I think I've heard of it, but I have not read it yet. All right, so how about any advice for listeners on how to get started in the flower industry?
I think the first thing you need to do is to kind of check out your area and see if somebody else in your area is doing the same thing you're doing, which don't let that stop you, but I think you should go and visit. Like, I have a flower farm that's only 30 minutes from me, and it's called Fox Farms in Eden, Ohio. And Karen and Jerry are very inviting and had me come out. They do a lot of everlastings. So I got to see that end of it. I just think that you need to really take the time, even if you have to travel. Like me traveling to Columbus, it was worth that 4-hour trip because I got so much more information than I could have ever got, even just reading about it. So I think visiting farms is really, really important. Kind of get a feel for, is this something really that I could do or I'd want to do? Because it's a lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm. It is a lot of work. But just hopefully, you know, the benefits are going to be, you know, it's something that you enjoy and you want to do.
Yep.
But I think that's so important. Talking to mentors, working with other people, you know, like you said, don't be afraid if somebody else is doing it, because, you know, their little unique part of their personality is going to be different than your personality. And, you know, you have to look at, like, you know, how many gas stations are kitty cornered from each other, or, you know, Coke and Pepsi right next to each other in the soda cooler. And it's just, you know, look at it from the abundance factor, that there's plenty for everybody. And, right. You know, we can't have enough flowers in the
That's
world
exact.
As far as I'm concerned.
I totally agree.
I always think about all those, you know, growing up outside of New York, when you go into New York City, there's flowers on almost every corner. You know, you don't go by a block, hardly in New York, or very few blocks in New York where you don't come to like a little grocery store, and inside the grocery store, you know, you can buy whatever, you know, any kind of food you need. But outside, there's almost always flowers. And, you know, the rest of the United States isn't like that. There's just, you know, the more flowers out there, the more people are going to want to buy them. And our flower market is nothing compared to other flower markets around the world. You know, lots of other countries sell way more flowers than we do here. So right. There's tons of room for growth. And then another guest I had on talked about one of the biggest use of pesticides is flowers that come into the United States, yes. That the majority of our flowers come from South America. Oops. And even if the flowers themselves are grown organically, when they go through customs, if they see any kind of bugs, they'll spray all the flowers right then, yes. And there to come through the border. And so a lot of people don't realize that part. Right. So,
and those are not regulated. There's no stipulation on what kind of pesticide they use on those flowers. We have no idea. So I think that's a big plus when you're growing locally, that your florists are like, they're cut usually the same day or then within a day they are delivered to the florist. They love that. You know, they're not touching all those chemicals. They're not smelling those chemicals. So they can actually, that is a very promotional thing for them to be able to say, hey, this is a locally grown from a flower farmer. So,
right. American grown.
Yes.
And that was one of the reasons I was also drawn to sunflowers in Lynn's book. She talks about they're one of the hardest flowers to transport. And so they're more likely to like you're more likely to have a quality flower compared to what they're going to be able to get from somewhere else, because sunflowers are so hard to transport. So if you can bring quality sunflowers, you know, they'll appreciate that, because yes. They're hard for florists to get.
That's correct.
All right. Okay. Well, so I guess we're down to the final question, which is just if there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or an organization you're passionate about, or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either in your local area or on a national or a global scale?
Okay. Well, I don't really have a charity, but what I would love to see is for our farmers to actually start experimenting more with organic pesticides and give them a real chance to improve our natural resources. I think that the chemicals that's used in this and the farmlands is an epidemic. I think it's terrible for us. I don't think that there will be, I have a real fear, I guess, of there's so many cancers. And I truly believe that a lot of that, if not most of that, comes from all the chemicals and pesticides they're using on all the foods and things that we're consuming. And it's in the ground, and we're exposed to it. It's in the air when they spray and you're outside. I mean, for me, when our farmers spray, I come in the house and make sure all the windows are shut. And, you know, I'll try not to go back outside for hours on end, and maybe not even till the next day, because I just think until something is changed with that we're going to just continually have a lot of these health issues and concerns that people have. So I would definitely love to see just the farmers really give organic practices an opportunity to see what they can do for their farms.
And wasn't it just like last week the World Health Organization released a report tying Monsanto's Roundup to cancer?
Yeah.
So that was a big thing in the news last week too. So very true. Okay. How about an inspirational tip or a quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Sure. I would say my favorite quote is, perseverance is not one long race. It's one short race after another.
Just okay. Typing. I'll edit that little part out.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest today. Weren't you like hesitant about talking? And look at all this great information that you've shared, and yeah. Just so knowledgeable. And I just, you know, I always love to talk about flowers myself. So And lots of great tips for me in here. And I know our listeners are going to be inspired, especially I think we all are kind of loving the way you're like, oh, I just went out and scattered the seeds to see what would come up.
It's
and
so true.
It's kind of funny. I talked to a friend of mine yesterday who's going to be on, she's going away on vacation, but I'm going to interview her when she gets back. And she was talking about, she just plants a ton of stuff so that there's just more than enough to grow.
There you go.
And that way the deer can eat their share and she'll still have some. And just, I don't know. I guess I shouldn't. Gonna have to wait till she says it in her words. It was really funny yesterday, but I think we'll all be inspired by that you were, you know, your trial and error and how well that you've actually done. Like, you have a really, I can tell, a definite business sense about you that's helping make you successful, and that talks about consistency is so important. Mm-hmm. And you know, just establishing yourself in the beginning, and hopefully other people will be inspired. And the way you talked about, you know, you were very vulnerable saying, you know, I was really nervous when I first went in there, because we're all like that. Yeah. You know, and you gotta, I know when I gotta go do something like that, I've gotta talk myself into what I'm gonna say, and I practice in the car. And yes. And still I get nervous, so.
And always wear a smile. Always wear a smile. Yeah. No matter if you can't hardly even talk, if you're smiling, that's a nice invite for them, you know? That's the first thing they see is your smile. So mm-hmm. Then they're going to see your buckets of flowers and go, oh, wow, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes, the flowers tell it all. And it's so, and flowers are just so welcoming. You know, you walk in, and I always love this time of year because the daffodils are in the stores, and I always try to pick the most closed bouquet of daffodils I can find, and then you put them on the table and you wake up in the morning and they've all bloomed. Yes. And it's such a surprise. Awesome. And I love that.
And, so. Awesome. And you do, one other thing, you do have to realize when you're cutting flowers for florists, it's different than cutting for people. So if you're cutting for a farmer's market, you want your flowers to be open, because people won't buy closed flowers. It's a visual thing, and they want to see a bouquet. And you can do haphazard, it doesn't matter. Just bright, beautiful flowers sell the best. But when you are cutting for a florist, they want their flowers closed a little bit more, because it gives them a little bit longer to open. And especially like tulips and daffodils and those kinds of things, there is definitely a certain time to cut those flowers, which you would need to research that. But it's not like selling to the public.
Right.
So,
and also I noticed, like, there's got to be some tip in there about putting the rubber bands on them. Like, when you take those rubber bands off, it does something that changes the flowers. When you get them home and you pull those rubber bands off and put them in the water, you can just almost feel the flowers start to, you know, breathe. Yep. Or something. Just like, you can tell that they're going to start to bloom just right away, just getting that rubber band off. So there must be something that holds them in, having those rubber bands on there, that I have no idea what it is.
I don't know.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Keith Sparks talked about that too. That's who it was. That was the other flower farmer I had on that has a business called Lilies and Lavender. And she had started out with farmers markets and talked about how it's a totally different, mm-hmm, type of bouquet that you need to put together to, you know, you want brighter flowers with bigger reds and oranges in it to attract people to come to your booth. Whereas, like, now she's getting into weddings too, like you are, and it's a totally different flower type that you grow.
Right.
And the harvesting type would be different. So
yeah, I think you just got to know your market, and that's a learning curve too. And that's another thing, you really need to talk to other people that's doing the same thing, because they all have really good tips that could propel your business to a totally different level than trying to do it by yourself. I think you need people, you need to surround yourself with people that are like yourself. Like, you know,
I like that. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, thank you, Karen, so much for being my guest today and sharing your incredible knowledge. And I, like I had told you in the email, I think because you are a newer, gardener, flower farmer out there, that some of the pain points are a little closer to you, and things that you know, maybe somebody who's been doing it for 20 or 30 years has forgotten about what it's like to be.
Yeah, well, I just want to say thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, and I hope I keep in touch with you.
Okay. And just before you go, really quick, do you want to tell listeners how they can get in touch with you? Like, do you have a website up yet? And I missed it somehow?
Oh, sure. I have, you can contact me through Gmail, which is www.flowersgalore101@gmail.com. And my website is flowersgaloreflorals.com.
Okay. So I'll put both of those in the show notes. And what about Twitter? Are you on Twitter? Isn't that how
I don't do Twitter.
No. Facebook.
I do Facebook. I have a Facebook site. Okay. Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much, Kieran, and have a great
Thank
day.
You.
And
you too.
Good luck this year. Maybe we'll check back with you in the fall
okay,
or something
that'd be
and see
great.
How it all turned out.
Okay. Good luck, Jackie.
Thanks. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com, like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you'd head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us get found by other listeners and share the knowledge. Thank you again for listening. Have a great day.